The name of our podcast, Tech Sequences, is really a mashup of two words, technology and consequences. We are fascinated by the consequences, intended or unintended, of the internet and related technologies for the way we live, play, and work. We are your hosts, Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. We started our careers at the dawn of the internet and have been friends, colleagues, and comrades in arms for the better part of 20 years. In this podcast, we examine the impact internet-related technologies have made or may make in our lives. I'm Alexa Rod.
And I'm Leslie Daigle.
Welcome to Tech Sequences. In the 1983 movie, Mr. Mom, Michael Keaton, the protagonist, plays poker with the other neighborhood moms. The scene is funny, not just because of its gender stereotypes, but because it is so dated. It is because they're playing poker not with money, but with coupons they've clipped from local papers. After all, who clips coupons anymore? Much has changed since then, but bunches remain the same. In other words, cost-conscious consumers still look for savings and retailers still want to know as much as they can about them. But the mechanism and the technologies to do either have changed dramatically. In 1983, the retailer was hard-pressed to know much about the consumer's shopping habits from coupons alone. Today, retailers collect a wealth of data on consumers. Case in point, earlier this year, the New York Times reported that at some locations, McDonald's has been testing an AI solution in its drive-thrus that recognizes the license plate of a customer and uses that information to provide AI-based recommendations of menu items. The technology, which requires permission from customers, takes into account the customer's previous order history and then suggests menu items on the drive-thru touchscreen. Today, data is being collected on consumers both online and offline, sometimes with explicit permission from customers and sometimes without, for reasons as varied as better targeting to improving store layout. How effective are these technologies, and what, if any, are the trade-offs and consequences?
Our guest today is Keith Kirkpatrick. Keith is a researcher and analyst focusing on emerging technologies for consumer and enterprise markets. He is a contributor to research providers such as ABI Research, Navigant Research, Fredonia, and Omnia, among others. He is also the founder of 4K Research and Consulting, LLC, an independent market research and consulting practice based in New York City. Welcome, Keith.
Thank you for having me today.
Can you summarize some of the ways that data collection on consumers by retailers has actually changed over the course of the last few years or decade or so?
Sure. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned, you cite the Mr. Mom example in the intro, because in the past, it was very, very hard to link the behavior, the physical behavior of consumers to actually what was going on both online and offline. And in the past couple of years, there have really been several technologies that are driving this increased usage or capture and usage of data. Certainly there are beacons, which are essentially signals that are placed around a store, which are linked to applications that sit on your cell phone that you can download. Let's say you go to the supermarket and you want to make sure that you're a part of the frequent shopper club. These beacons will basically link up with that application and then track your behavior throughout the store. You know, where are you walking? What's your shopping pattern? What types of products do you look at? How long do you look at them? And then, of course, when you go to check out, you'll actually be creating a list of all of the items that you purchase. This can be extremely powerful for retailers because they'll get an entire history of not only what you buy, but also will be able to kind of draw linkages between different types of products. So, for example, if you are buying cereal or meat or vegetables, all of that, you know, certainly is something that everybody does. But when you take that information and then link it to other demographic information that you might have, your age, your gender, where you live, all of that can be extremely powerful in not only creating a profile of you that the store can then use to further market you, but it can also be used, packaged up, and then sold to other third parties, which is where we get into some of the more challenging aspects of this increased data collection.
So there's sort of two things here. There's the how do retailers collect information and what are they doing with the information? And focusing on the how do they collect it part for a little bit longer. Sure. In describing the beacons, do they actually have to have any app open for that to work, or?
Essentially, they need to download an application to do it. Now, there's a couple of points there. One is there is some value to the consumer by downloading. Let's say I walk into a Target store and I download the application. Well, I'm going to be notified of any kind of sales or specials or promotions. But what that also does is it opens up the possibility of being tracked even further than I normally would be, just instead of just, you know, knowing that I'm a shopper there. It can actually track where I'm going, what types of products I'm browsing, and of course, you know, where am I walking within that store? So now you do need to provide permission. With most reputable applications, store applications, you do have the ability to go into the app, set your preferences, and say, yes, I agree to be tracked, or no, I don't, with the obvious benefit of if you allow yourself to be tracked, you will be, you know, given perhaps, you know, more offers or more benefits than those who are not tracked.
Now, retailers used to use cameras, right? In-store cameras to track customers. And was it that customers felt that these cameras were too intrusive, or was it that the retailers felt that these beacons would actually, combined with the app, would do a better job of tracking customers inside?
You know, Alicia, it's actually the latter, because retailers are still using cameras. Cameras serve two purposes. Several purposes. One, of course, is they are used for loss prevention. They're used for security. And they're also used in conjunction with beacons to provide additional insights. So if I go up to a particular shelf and there's a shelf camera, it can actually see, okay, where am I looking? It can use eye tracking to see, am I scanning for competitive products, or am I just looking at that one specific one? That is extremely powerful now, because you can take all of that, all of those disparate data sources, and combine them and really create a real picture of shopping behavior beyond just, I'm going to go in and buy my Cheerios off the shelf.
Yeah, and it's that behavior part that's really key, right? You know, you alluded, what are they looking at? You know, this goes beyond the whole theory of place the important products higher on the shelves and the lower cost products lower on the shelves so people don't see them. Much is about tracking behavior and then I guess trying to shape behavior within the store or beyond the store?
Right. Well, it's really about, if you just take a step back and think about the way online retail has totally transformed the way, you know, retailers or really any kind of, you know, business to consumer business has operated. They used to really not know that much about someone unless that information was provided to them. Now, of course, if you are, let's say I'm shopping online at Target.com, and it really could be any retailer, I'm just using that as an example. And then I download this app onto my phone, it's going to also track and link any kind of activity I have online with the behavior in the store. So what that does is it'll show to them, you know, does Keith go on and browse online and then go, you know, I really need certain products, I can't wait for it, so I'll go to the store and buy it, as opposed to the ones that I go, yeah, I can wait for it to be shipped to me in a couple of days, or vice versa. Do I go to the store, look on the shelf, and then not purchase something? And they can understand, well, am I purchasing it online, or am I not purchasing at all? Because perhaps I either didn't need it anymore, or maybe I'm going to a competitor.
So this happens when the customer still has to keep that app open even after they leave the store, for the store to be able to still track this on an online basis, right? To see whether they've bought that product online.
Well, it updates, you know, every time. A lot of these beacons and a lot of the applications will run in the background, and that's the thing that a lot of folks don't realize, is that they're updated, they're running in the background when you may not realize it. And the only way you would realize it is by looking when you download an app from the App Store or from the Google Play Store. You need to look at all the permissions that you provide to that application in terms of what data it can collect, When is it operating? In particular, location data is a big one.
Yes.
You need to accept that. And a lot of people see value in it, but I think they don't always realize how much data is being collected on them and how it is being used. And, ultimately, it really can create a full picture of a particular person, perhaps more so than any other time in history.
So can you tell us who are the retailers that are actually using this beacon technology, and what have they found? What's been their experience?
Sure. Well, it's been over the past several years, a bunch of different retailers, Walmart, Target, I believe some large supermarket chains had experimented with beacons several years ago. I believe Walmart actually stopped because they said that it wasn't providing benefits. I have a sneaky suspicion it was also because of consumer pushback in terms of the level of invasiveness. And I would say, looking at the, I think cameras were brought up. Cameras are technology that some retailers will admit to using and some will not, even if it's still going on, because obviously they want to make sure that they can, protect their merchandise. And I think that the combination of the technologies is what's really challenging for consumers to deal with, because they, there may be a sign when you walk into a store that says this facility is under surveillance, or if you click on an app, if you download an app, it says you will be tracked. But I think people don't really pay attention to that. And what happens is the retailers are out collecting all of this information, and it really does, allow them to learn much more about you, your purchasing habits, and really who you are based on the products that you're buying than if you were to not be using those applications.
Are they repackaging the data that they have collected and selling it to other retailers? And if so, are they doing it without permission of the customers?
The most of the large, national chains or international chains will say that they are not doing it, or they will have some language in terms of their application on what they are doing or what they are not doing with it. My sense is that there may be some repurposing or reselling of that data that is, that you're granting them license to do that in the fine print of the application itself. I think the greater fear is that, large corporations like Target, like Walmart, like financial institutions have been hacked, and all of the data that they are storing on their servers, is being made available that way, regardless of whether or not they're trying to protect it, they have that information, and that information is vulnerable.
I remember reading a story about, I don't remember which big box store it was, Walmart or Target or one of the above, where they would send out very targeted flyers. And there's the story of the dad marches into the store in incensed that why are they sending his 16-year-old daughter all these coupons for baby stuff? Don't they understand she's a 16-year-old girl? And then had to go back, a few weeks later when the daughter admitted that she was pregnant. But not really a great way for dad to find out. But also behind that was the fact that stores in the retail business understands that if you can get the attention of and the loyalty of a customer at major life transitions, such as when you're about to have a child, then you'll wind up, spending most of your money with them. So those are really key inflection points that they're trying to detect. And so that they can draw you in and, become your primary provider. So I guess it's not just about painting a picture of your life and maybe revealing stuff you would not like to have revealed, but it is actually kind of key apparently to the retail business in this modern era.
Absolutely. I mean, even if you look at other types of stores, I think my liquor store asks me when my birthday is so they can send me a promotion, to make sure that I shop there to get my, a birthday bottle of wine or whatever. So yeah, there's certainly the push to create a much more personalized marketing and shopping experience is one reason why they are collecting all of this data, because they can, as you mentioned, hit life events. They can also, hopefully, by, again, correlating all of the other data about you, figure out, okay, are you the type of person who is going to be having the, you know, the weekend barbecue on, you know, 4th of July, well, when there isn't a pandemic, but, you know, all of that is valuable information they can use to target market to you based on, you know, who you are and what you do. What are your other behaviors? And a lot of this is certainly legitimate in the sense of they're looking to sell you more things. I think the only question really arises is, you know, at what point do you as a consumer start to do you realize that all of this information, A, is being collected? How is it being used? And of course, realize that, you know, data breaches are a fact of life. You know, it doesn't matter how big an organization is. Most of them have suffered massive breaches and they don't always come clean about it. And it's, you know, once you put any piece of information out there, it's out there forever.
And all this customization and tailoring and whatnot, does it actually work?
It does. It does. From what, you know, in terms of talking with retailers, it seems to work because, again, if you are, let's say you are a time-pressed shopper going into a store, let's say, and you know that, you know, you don't have time to run around to a million different aisles and looking for that. If you get a thing, an app on, or a ping on your phone saying, hey, today we're having a special on, let's use the example, baby diapers, you know, Huggies, you know, 20% off, whatever. That is valuable because you don't want to be just running all over the place. And you are looking for, oftentimes you are looking for a good deal. And because they know that you bought, you know, Huggies in the past, perhaps you're loyal to that brand. So in that sense, it can be very, very valuable. Where it becomes less valuable is when they don't have as much data to comb through and correlate all of your different interests and likes. And that's when you start to see ads that don't look as relevant to you online, or when you could walk into a store and you get, you know, an ad for, let's say, a fishing pole, and you've never gone fishing in your life. Then you have to wonder, well, what data are they actually capturing about me? Is it accurate? Clearly, it might not be. Or perhaps, are their internal algorithms wrong in terms of what products are they serving up to me based on the information that they have?
Yeah, I think they really haven't gotten a good grip on when I'm shopping for gifts for others.
Right.
Like, I don't fish. Maybe I bought a gift for somebody who fishes and I really don't want to see fishing reels in my Facebook feed forevermore.
Right. Right.
I think we keep coming back to this notion that there's this trade-off of convenience versus privacy and security. So by providing so much data to these retailers, that can then become the basis of a data breach. We're trading in, you know, the convenience that we may get by being able to find something faster in a store, or getting a 20% coupon because of our loyalty to a particular brand or for a particular store. But I want to go to the issue of shrinkage. So shrinkage is the theft and loss that a retailer experiences, which is measured as a percentage of sales. And if we take Walmart, for example, last year, assuming that they had the same average industry shrinkage, which was about 1.62% of sales, that would have been about $4 billion for Walmart. So that's a sizable amount. And so therefore, there's obviously good motivation for them to deploy whatever technology there is to combat it. Now, it turns out they deployed this AI technology cameras at their cash register and with their workers to be able to look at theft. And a year later, they did this in 2019, apparently, and they had a lot of backlash from their employees saying that this technology really didn't work. So are technologies like this overall Are they working, is Walmart sort of the only case example where allegedly it didn't work very well to reduce shrinkage, or are other retailers experiencing better use of this technology, better results?
Well, I have heard and actually spoke with another large apparel retailer. I'm not allowed to disclose who they are, but they'd actually deployed cameras in stores and actually have seen better results for two reasons. One is simply by the use of cameras, you have that deterrent factor of, you know, you can see it, you know that potentially someone's watching. By using the AI algorithm to really kind of identify and detect certain behaviors that could indicate someone is looking to steal. You know, for example, someone doing this, looking around side to side, perhaps when picking up an item, you know, trying to conceal it in an article of clothing or another bag. They actually saw a decline in terms of actual shrinkage. I think they said it was something like about 5%. And this is going back a couple of years from the last time I spoke with them. And their feeling was it was a question of not having the physical labor to have someone within a large department store, you know, standing around every corner looking at every shopper who comes in. So it's a question of really kind of balancing the desires of a retailer to protect their merchandise and balancing customer privacy, because I may walk into a store and perhaps I'm just nervous. Perhaps I'm just naturally awkward. I might get caught up in that AI that detects and analyzes my physical movements as someone who is looking to steal. So I think it's always going to be a work in progress. One of the advantages of many AI systems that are deployed is that they do get better over time as long as they are constantly reviewed and tuned by humans. You can say, okay, this person was actually trying to steal. All right, let's tag that image and mark that as, okay, this is an example of someone who's trying to steal, versus going back and perhaps flagging someone who is not doing anything. They need to actually go through and tune that. And that can take time. And certainly there are questions in terms of, you know, fairness when it comes to looking at, you know, are certain people being targeted more, you know, or caught up in these algorithms more so than others, whether it's because of race or, you know, perhaps maybe the way they're dressed or whatnot. So all of those are questions that need to be addressed.
That's not new to AI, right? I mean, and in some ways AI may be better at filtering that out, because I mean, as you're describing this, all I can think of is a memory from fully 35 to 40 years ago when I was in an apparel store and, you know, the overly officious clerk was tracking me around the store because, I mean, clearly this teenager was going to be stealing stuff, right? Profiling, in other words, and no, I was not going to be stealing anything. And it did actually tick me off enough that I left the store and maybe didn't shop there for a while. So all that to say, maybe there's an upside to the AI. And I had to chuckle when Alexa was describing the employees pushing back on these systems for preventing shrinkage, because it's like, gosh, maybe it's the employees that are actually affecting the shrinkage. And maybe they don't want their little systems undermined, but what do I know?
Now, actually, you raise a good point there. That is particularly at supermarket checkouts, that's where a lot of shrinkage occurs. And it's not necessarily deliberate. It can be, you know, let's say the clerk is doing something, you know, and they don't even realize it. You know, the old, you know, they have scanners now, but, you know, the bottom of the cart trick where you put stuff at the bottom and the clerk doesn't know to look over and make sure that there's nothing in there. Or perhaps something is being rung up incorrectly, not deliberately, but perhaps incorrectly. So there are certainly, you know, advantages there. But certainly I don't think anybody, whether it's employees or, you know, customers, nobody wants to feel like they're being watched all the time. And the trade-off for consumers walking around a store is hopefully you're getting better deals or you're getting more targeted offers to you, perhaps a better experience. For workers, not sure what the benefit is other than, you know, if you're doing your job the way you're supposed to be doing, you know, perhaps, you know, management needs to, you know, figure out a way to reward that. But that's, you know, that's obviously a complex question.
I think for workers, one of the perhaps one of the reasons why they don't like it is particularly on low wage workers. They also see the trend already that machines are replacing some of the, you know, road activity. You know, the automatic checkout counters were first, and now perhaps these AI. You know, why would you need a store security if you could have technology take care of that by, you know, cameras? And from the consumer's perspective, you know, I don't know how much of that would be sort of a psychological deterrent if you were a shoplifter and you knew you were walking into a store that had cameras deployed at every corner and had AI watching your moves. Would that deter you versus going to another one that did not have that technology?
You know, it's an interesting question because I think, you know, in a lot of the, you know, I'm just thinking of some drugstores, you know, where they have a big sign saying you're under surveillance. And obviously they're worried about obviously theft of merchandise, but also of course, you know, when we're talking about pharmaceuticals. And I think that it comes down to the old, you know, is something a soft target? Is it, you know, something that's more protected? I do think there is some incentive for some. Others who are just, you know, for whatever reason, maybe they are just, you know, not thinking about it and will, you know, go after, you know, any particular store. I mean, we have, in my town, we have a few independent pharmacies that are left. And I do know that they've had some issues with shoplifting because they don't have the technology and they don't have the staff, you know, and, you know, it can be a challenge for some of these smaller ones to implement that technology, not only from a technological or cost perspective, but they want to feel that, you know, they are, you know, not just like the sort of large chain companies out there.
So we've described so far what's happening in North America and the US, both in terms of what gets tracked, how it's tracked, and how it's used. Is it the same all over, or are things different done differently in Korea, say, or China?
Well, China is obviously a unique case. Their surveillance is, you know, pretty commonplace, and there's not a heck of a lot consumers can really do about it. In other parts of the world, if we talk about Europe, let's say, there is a very, very strong privacy you know, component to everything going on there, everything from GDPR to just, you know, everybody feels that, you know, people have a right to personal privacy. There's a lot of disclosure. There's a lot of, you know, you have to give explicit permission to be tracked in Europe. And it's interesting because if you look at, you know, consumers there, you know, that all of that activity is slowly starting to filter over here to the United States. If you look at things like California Consumer Privacy Act, which is, you know, clearly, you know, I think one of the first steps that, you know, we're kind of looking at what's going on in Europe. Companies are looking at it going, well, if I have to do all of these things to comply with GDPR, and now we have the California Consumer Privacy Act, the companies I've talked to have said, well, in a lot of ways, we may be defaulting to that higher level of, you know, making sure we get explicit permission to capture and track people, as well as employing more robust security and data storage, because it's, you know, clearly on the minds of folks, particularly in Europe, but even more so, you know, I think American consumers are starting to realize that there is so much information that is being captured on them, both offline in the physical world and, of course, online. And when you put those two together, it can be somewhat overwhelming in terms of how much information they have on people.
We use the example of the McDonald's trialing this AI reading your license plate. You know, of course, it's within permission, with consumers provided permission, but it's still somewhat eerie, at least to me anyway, of going through a drive-through and knowing that my license plate is being scanned. But are there other examples of these types of, let's say, technologies or use of technologies that are a little bit further out than just, let's say, you know, beacons being used in stores that are perhaps innovative, perhaps, you know, on the side of eerie that you have found? And what are they and how are they being used?
Sure. Well, one of the things is if we're, you know, talking about life in 2020, we can't ignore coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And if the apps that were being rolled out by Google and others to track where people are, what are they doing, who are they congregating with? In theory, it's quite good to understand, you know, where people are getting together. Can you use that data to predict where there might be an outbreak in terms of more coronavirus cases? But it does raise some questions in terms of, you know, privacy. You know, why should Google or the app maker or even a third party, meaning perhaps the government, state and local governments, why should they know exactly where I'm going? Because, you know, I think it was back when all of this kind of started to blow up here in March or April, there were real concerns that the government was taking that information and not just using it to track coronavirus, because it's a, you know, location data is location data. And, you know, can it see, you know, am I really just going to, you know, where I would, you know, tell my family, or am I going somewhere else? I mean, there's all those kind of questions there. But most importantly, I think, you know, when you combine that again with things, you know, technology like GPS tracking, there is also now in many of the roads out there, they don't use, you know, your easy pass, you know, to collect tolls. Now they're actually taking, as you said, license plate photos to actually track where you're going. And that can be very invasive because, again, you know, where a lot of the mindset here is, you know, where I go is my business. But of course, you know, you combine that with other types of data collection that we've agreed to for years, credit card or payment card data. You can pretty much track where people are, what they're doing, simply by looking at where they've used their payment cards.
Yeah.
I think the real issue is not so much any one specific technology, whether it's cameras or beacons or anything like that. It's being able to combine all of those disparate sources of information together and actually create a real picture of who you are and what you're doing and where are you doing it.
Yeah, because when we started talking about retail tracking here, we started talking about the advantages it provided the retailer in terms of potentially putting together better opportunities for selling, you know, doing their business, and possibly doing better opportunities for reducing shrinkage in their business. And question mark on whether or not it actually provides a better consumer experience. But when it comes to just simply tracking where people are, it's not at all clear who's benefiting from that, you know, least of all the person who's being tracked and the picture is being painted of them. Yes, the coronavirus provides an excuse for doing that, but it's not really clear that there is an entity that can action that in a way that will be useful to do one or both of, you know, something good for the person who's being tracked or reduce the impact of the coronavirus, which we would all so dearly love at this point.
Well, I guess, are you guys talking about the contact tracing app, which you would have to actually download on your phone so that you're giving that's explicit permission, knowing that you are being tracked so that you'll know if you're within close proximity with other people because of, let's say, Bluetooth interaction with other phones?
That's one piece.
That's
of it.
Different.
But there's
yeah.
a lot of other tracking too, right? I mean, like he said, there's still even just what people do with tracking license plates, but mm-hmm. also, I mean, I've regularly read the trends in mobility data in, you know, the state where I am, and that's anonymized data. But somebody is looking at where are mobile phones going and how many
yes.
mobile phones are doing fewer excursions than they normally do.
Right.
Right.
I mean, wouldn't you argue that that's actually very helpful during Corona times, because now you can see, are people actually following public health advice and social distancing? We're in Thanksgiving right now, and CDC has said, you know, for families and for people not to have get-togethers and try to do a social distance Thanksgiving. Maybe data like that shows whether people are following and can forecast potential trends in virus.
So it does, in that the anonymized data is showing that, yes, in fact, which states are, as a whole, have populations that are doing some level of isolation. But it is not more specific that, and you don't know what else, who else is doing something with the data beyond this anonymized non-granular readout that we see publicly. So I can't say there's no use to it, but I'm arguing that it's fuzzy.
I think one of the key takeaways then, perhaps, and Keith, you can correct us, is that once you actually give up the data, and I think you may have said it earlier on, for whatever purpose, you've given it up. There is no retraction of that data.
That's absolutely true. Even if you were to say, let's say I downloaded an app and I had location permissions on and I decided to rescind that permission, all of my activity up to that point is still out there forever. And it can be potentially resold depending on, you know, whether or not you've agreed to that in the first place. If the data collector is not above the line and decides to sell it anyway to third parties, which, you know, it's obviously very valuable data, I'm certain it goes on. And then, of course, what I mentioned before, which is the whole issue of data breaches. If the information is out there, it's obviously valuable. There are going to be actors out there who will go after that because it's, you know, it can be resold, it can be used, it can be used for, you know, I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, basic data that you would supply to any store, your name, your address, your telephone number, you know, perhaps if it's a payment card, your bank account number. And that could be used to call you up with a phishing scam and, you know, basically try to get access to your account. So there's a lot of, I guess the issue is, how do you actually measure what benefit you're getting versus, you know, what it could potentially cost you? Obviously, we're living in 2020. I don't know too many people who, you know, don't have a cell phone, don't have a bank card. I don't know how they do it. Perhaps they do, but I think it does. You do need to be wary of, you know, who is collecting information and you know, whether or not it is of value to you, you know, if giving up that privacy.
Very important thoughts, because clearly the picture is going to get a lot murkier before it gets clearer. So definitely a fascinating discussion this morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Keith.
Thanks for listening to this TechSequences podcast. We are Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. You can reach us by email, techsequences@techsequences.org. We'd love to hear from you to know what you thought about this episode or ideas for future episodes. TechSequences. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook and subscribe through your favorite podcasting service.